Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. It's a great honor to welcome Dr. Stephen Runge to the Stone Chapel. Dr. Runge is the author of a lot of books on linguistics and discourse analysis and the Greek text of the New Testament. He has a PhD from the University of Stellenbosch, working under Christo van der Merwe. He's been a scholar in residence at Logos Bible Software, and he's been an adjunct faculty member and a visiting professor in a number of schools in North America. Right now, you're working with Grace. Is it Grace Seminary?
Grace School of Theology in
Grace
Houston.
Grace School of Theology in Houston. Well, it's great to see you.
It's great
Welcome.
To be here.
I've heard so much about you, and it's great to see you and your wife here visiting with us for a little bit.
Yes.
And we hope to see you back a lot.
I hope so, too. This is my first time to Houston, and I hope it's the next visit is soon.
Well, you've not seen a lot because it's a rainy day. We haven't been able to do that. What's your kind of initial impressions of the library?
It's amazing. I've had the opportunity to visit libraries in the UK. I basically made up an excuse to go visit the Bodleian Library at Oxford and made it into the Radcliffe Camera. And it's very, very much the same, not just the style, but the vibe in terms of the architecture down to the detail of the woodwork. It's magnificent. And the holdings, from what I've seen just walking around quickly, surpass the architectural design and style and attention to detail. So yeah. I'm very much looking forward to more time.
Come
to
here
just
and crash
sit.
A
yes,
little
sir.
Bit. Yeah, not crash, but I mean, you know, come here and spend some time with us.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're glad that you're here. So let's begin. A signature question. It's always a good question, I think, but who is Stephen Runge?
Well, I have been trying to... I'm someone who didn't really figure out what I was good at till I was about 32. My father was a research scientist who worked for one of those government agencies, and he developed intelligence analytic programs, and he was training me to be an analyst. And I actually went through the first round of application process to work in one of those agencies, and at the end realized that it was not for me, but that I didn't know what I was good at. I had been working in construction at the time, framing and siding houses, and had been a believer for a few years by the time I graduated from college. And Trinity Western University was fairly close by. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to commute locally. And I decided it was better to, based on my grades in undergrad, it was better to fail quietly locally than to move somewhere and do it potentially spectacularly. all of my education has been part-time. Did a Master's of Theological Studies in Biblical Languages there. 2-year degree, 7 years part-time while framing houses, and then started doing research and reading toward toward the doctoral program. But the pivotal event for me that's really shaped me as a scholar, one force was the framing and siding houses. What's the practical payoff? What's the process of doing things and not just to do to have that desire to be able to preach as much as possible the research I was working on, to have some kind of a so what? Part of that came from the biblical language faculty being asked by the administration, why do we need biblical languages in our MDiv program? Students are, you know, wanting to go do other things. Many people view Greek and Hebrew as a hazing ritual that you need to go through. And few people could really make a practical case for these are the specific benefits. These are the specific things that will change your expository preaching, that will change your understanding of the language, that will change your understanding of rhetoric instead
That's
of just
a great point.
Seeing a classification. Yeah. And I decided to make it my mission in life to be that kind of a specialist. But as well, it was a summer of 1993 in southern Ethiopia in the Sidamo province. And seeing that the national pastors were basically being trained from hand-me-down textbooks that were not culturally relevant, and no one was learning original languages to be able to have the competence in the original languages to write commentaries direct from Hebrew to Amharic, because Amharic's a Semitic language. That's mm-hmm. that's what's now Ge'ez, or what was Ge'ez is now Amharic. In terms of the history of development. And yet those Ethiopian students that were studying Hebrew with me were struggling mightily, because most of the descriptions were Hebrew through Latin or English. And no one was really doing anything about it. So Christo Vandermeerve was one of those, and he took me on and was willing to take a carpenter with no real pedigree under his wing, based on the reading I had done on my own. And that those two things have really kind of been the missional focus for me. Again, the practical application for ministry, but fundamentally changing how and why we use biblical languages, and to not just develop the ivory tower kinds of pieces for the theoretical framework, but to intentionally drive that information down into pulpits through pastoral equipping and training. And that's, I've just started a everyday exegesis as a way of doing that.
Next question, to talk a little bit about everydayexegesis.com, yeah. which is a brilliant little website. I mean, I've
well, thank you.
To spend some time.
Thank my the tribute to my wife for designing that, but and for her really helping draw out what my passion was. And then the everyday exegesis will help formalize some of the relationships I've had with other pastors and scholars to hopefully organize conferences, both for, again, that kind of high level original research like the Greek Revisited and the Discourse Studies in Biblical Interpretation volumes. But then as well,
and these books are available at the Linear Theological Library. And the ones that you've written that aren't, we're going to make sure we get.
Oh, that's fine. I can help out with that as well.
And we're going to get your signature in those before you leave today. So for those who don't know, one of your books is called is about discourse grammar. And that term discourse, it could be a foreign word to people. What is discourse grammar exactly?
Discourse grammar, most grammar is focused at the sentence level, both English, Greek, Latin, and kind of looking at structures within a single sentence or a clause. But there are certain things that operate above the sentence level, and that if you're not aware, you know, looking at higher level dynamics and constraints, that they can be missed. So if I was telling a story, if I tried to describe the English phrase, so anyhow, at the sentence level, it would be very difficult. But if I was to talk about how its function in storytelling, I would be able to say if there was some background information you needed, either about a person or about an event, so anyhow is the way of signaling, I'm done with that bunny trail, I'm done with that background story, and we're returning to wherever it was that we left off. That would be an example of a discourse grammar approach. So it's functional in terms of what are things do instead of just how do I translate it.
Right.
It's my approach is cross-linguistic. So it's not just looking at what English does, but looking at how languages work. And then I can say, this is how English does it. But in Greek, that same function or that same task would be accomplished in a different way. And so that would help English-speaking students, where English is their mother tongue, to understand why, like, that particle is untranslatable, why de or men are oftentimes left untranslated. It's not a bad translation. It's just simply Greek and English are not the same. But it's also to pave the way for those same kinds of materials to be taken into majority world, non-English speaking languages, where the resources are a lot more limited with biblical languages, or they're taking grammars and things that have been translated from German or translated from English. And a lot of our Greek resources are translated from German. The goal with this would be to kind of democratize access to this information for people outside of English, and as much as possible to have it be organically illustrated from mother tongue illustrations rather than translations from English. Mm. So that's where the kind of cross-linguistic, and at times it can be off-putting because I have to learn a little bit of jargon, or I'm learning about something that instead of just telling me how it works in English, there's a higher level motive for doing that, and so that it would be transferable. But by and large, people that have read my discourse grammar, the Greek New Testament, have said the chapter on conjunctions is chapter two is worth the price of the book because it's helped them bridge those mismatches between Greek and English. Mm-hmm. That oftentimes,
and the same thing could happen with Hebrew. Right?
Absolutely,
I mean, yeah,
yeah. And so that my doctoral studies were and MA were both Hebrew Bible, but I'm better known for my Greek publishing. It's just I haven't had time yet to get back to the Hebrew resources.
Yeah.
But there's some great work going on in Hebrew Bible. And in that sense, it's probably further ahead than New Testament studies for Greek linguistics is concerned.
You know, a lot of times we say, let's just go to the dictionary and find out what the word means,
mm-hmm.
right? But words don't just mean things, they do things.
Right.
And particularly in the kind of phrase that you know, so anyhow.
Right.
You know, let's get back to the main point kind of thing, but you're signaling things. And we're not really good at picking up on those signals. Is there a translation out there that is a bit better at picking up on those signals, or is that yet to be written? That translation
is always I don't know. To me, it's you're facing a series of trade-offs. You have languages like New American Standard or New Revised Standard, New King James, that are going for more of a preservation of structural devices in the original language, or mm-hmm. or in the Logos Bible ecosystem, the Lexham English Bible. The Lexham English Bible is not designed to be the thing you'd sit down and read. It's essentially like the scaffolding infrastructure to support data to map things over.
So it's the framing.
It is, very much so.
Going back to the construction
image. And so in that sense, it's providing a structural snapshot of things, just like the ironwork that you know, I can see outside with the new building that's underway.
Right.
There are no bones on it. It's just simply the steel, and it's incredibly important, and that plays a role. But then you have other translations like the NIV that are focused on readability. So mm-hmm. they've dynamically translated some of these things into a more comprehensive, integrated, or synthesis, perhaps, of some of these features, but you can't see the infrastructure as well. Mm. And so when people say, what's the best translation? I'll generally say, it depends on what you're doing. If you're interested in the infrastructure and the details, then a New American Standard or the more literal translation can really be very helpful. But if you don't know what you're looking at and you don't understand what those structural things are, having those details can kind of be a hindrance or a stumbling block at times, and that's where having an NIV or NT writes. What is the name of the trend?
The Everyday
New Testament
for Everyone.
New Testament for Everyone.
I'm trying to remember that. I've got them in my office.
Have paraphrases.
Yeah. Sure. So a paraphrase sometimes can accomplish some of those features, right?
Right, and it can also provide a second pass where it brings a freshness to content you're familiar with, but with a different angle. It doesn't say you have to agree with it, but
right.
A pastor friend of mine will use a different translation every 2 years for his personal devotions, just to help him think differently about things compared to the ESV that he preaches from.
I think sometimes when people think about a literal translation, they think that language works sort of 5 = 5, word equals that, and you just, all you have to do is sort of plug those words in together. But if only it was true, but that's more like a secret code in a way than it is like how languages function. And I think part of your work and the work that some of my students have done, in with you in the past has really helped us understand the importance of linguistics as a background of study, understanding just how languages work in general.
Right.
Because we're not very good at that. I mean, we speak a language, we read it, but we don't really understand it.
Right. And that's the challenge. Language is messy. And when a lot of the grammarians have been working from kind of a Latin-based framework to describe things, when you encounter things that don't operate the same as they do in Latin or in English, then you end up finding hyphenated descriptions like the, you know, the futuristic aorist or imperatival participles. That's right. Telling us that these things are mismatched with English, because English wouldn't do something like that. English wouldn't use a participle, it would use an imperative. And that's why you find the translations translating as an imperative. Mm. My work and my focus, and again, many of your students that have collaborated with me, our goal is to help people understand Greek as Greek, to understand it on its own terms. And we can never go back and equal a native speaker understanding, but particularly in the area of function words. So you talked about looking something up in a lexicon and in a dictionary and having that kind of mathematical equation with nouns, with content words like nouns and verbs, that's easier. Mm. But with the function words like conjunctions and prepositions that are essentially giving you instructions about how to relate two things together.
Right. Yeah.
Those are the tricky ones. Mm. And that's where stepping back and bringing in a kind of a cross-linguistic perspective, getting help from the world of linguistic typology about how the world's languages work gives us kind of a grab bag to say, okay, if this is actually behaving a lot like we see in these other languages. And so the Greek verb system has really benefited from stepping back and looking at this kind of broader perspective that help us understand Greek more as Greek, because English doesn't do things that way. So whether it's understanding the what verbal aspect is, or the Greek verb, the Greek voice system with middle voice.
Yeah.
Those are areas that have been debated for many years, mainly because people lack the framework. But if you go back to the people I affectionately call the dead grammarians, the A.T. Robertsons and the Bloss and Thackeray, they knew their languages incredibly well. Mm. And if we read them in their own time period charitably, you can see the understanding. They hedge, but the very much in keeping with the modern linguistic understandings, they just lack the descriptive terms to describe things as elegantly as we're able to do today.
Yeah. Well, your work has been seminal for so many in helping us to see those, the bigger structures. And we're grateful that we've had a chance today to talk to you on the Stone Chapel about this. If people want to know more, tell us about your website one more time.
Everydayexegesis.com is something I've just started up. I'd had a blog earlier called ntdiscourse.org. Mm. Basically, I blog through the discourse grammar to kind of test out ideas. From my standpoint, if people can't understand what I'm doing, it's my problem. I need to bridge the gap and find better ways of explaining or illustrating things. So Everyday Exegesis is focused much more on pastoral training and expository preaching. So blogs and videos will be focused more on that, and then probably I will return to doing some of the more academic blog posts on ntdiscourse.org again. But that's been basically dormant since 2012. You and I were talking earlier about things with my parents, and a lot of my academic things have just kind of been mothballed, and I feel like I'm just getting back into my stride again to getting back some of the higher level passions and longer term projects that I've had, and very, very thankful for the opportunity to do that and the opportunity to partner with Grace starting in January.
Well, we're looking forward to some conversations continuing here. Dr. Steve Runge, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks to Brent Johnson and Janet Seifert for editing these podcasts. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Theological Library Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or would just like to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is L-A-N-I-E-R. Thanks for listening.